Well met, and welcome to episode 48, the Bill Shakespeare Project podcast for August 29th, 2010. For our blog and previous podcast episodes, check us out at thebillshakespeareproject.com. Greetings. This is Bill Walthall, and we're back. Yes, the Bill Shakespeare Project podcast is back and almost immediately off track. We return to the microphone not with a discussion of a play, but rather with a report from Ashland's Oregon Shakespeare Festival and production reviews of Throne of Blood, Twelfth Night, Hamlet, Henry IV Part 1, and American Night. Then we'll finish up with a look towards the future of the project. So, last week, Lisa, the boys, and I ventured up to Ashland, Oregon to take in some plays and to have a vacation. Of course, the boys were less than thrilled with the prospect, particularly our 16-year-old Kyle, especially when he found out that we were going to be spending 5 days in a house without internet, a hotel pool, or even, heaven forbid, cable. But go they did, like they had a choice. Our first play at Oregon Shakespeare Festival was the world premiere of Throne of Blood, adapted and directed by Ping Chong from the Akira Kurosawa film. A samurai adaptation of Macbeth, a film that many critics feel is one of the greatest cinematic takes on Shakespeare's works. Chong is an internationally renowned director, and the film holds a very warm spot in my heart, and you can just hear a butt coming, can't you? But the production just left me cold. It wasn't like there weren't great things in the production. The use of video projections was masterful, pulling us into the production before it even began and making the scene transitions flow. The performance by Akko as Lady Asagi, the Lady Macbeth analog, was tremendous, using aspects of no Japanese theater conventions that were employed by that character in the film version as well. The film made great use of the contrast between Asagi's no style, full of static stances, slow movements, and ritualized delivery, and the much more Western acting style of Toshiro Mifune as Washizu, the Macbeth character. Here, that role was played by Kevin Kennerly. His performance was solid, not transcendent or great, but solid. His voice is incredible, and I would have loved to have seen him as Macbeth himself as he played that role last year up in Ashland. The remainder of the cast was serviceable, but nothing to write home or you about, save for one. The forest spirit is played by Christopher Jean. Here, as in the film, the three witches are replaced by a single forest spirit, dressed all in white, ghostly, sitting at a spinner's wheel. It sings some of its lines, chants others. Jean's singing was incredible, and the performance of the rest of his lines was strikingly effective. Most of the time, he would have this high-octave lilt to his voice, but at crucial moments it would drop, become ragged, become almost exorcist-like in its intensity. Now, the program had said that the production ran about 90 minutes without an intermission, but as we entered the theater, the beautiful Angus Bomer Theater, the ticket taker told us that it was 2 hours without a break. So, what changed between the printing of the program and our performance? While my wife Lisa may joke that it's all that no-style slow motion used, I think it was something else. Interjected throughout the play was comic relief by four soldiers, always presented off to stage left, and it felt out of place within the context of this overly earnest, deadly serious proceeding. What made these interludes even worse, in my opinion, was the insertion into them of in-jokes, tiny references to titles of other Kurosawa films, Hidden Fortress, High and Low, The Lower Depths. It's one of the few times I've ever felt that those who didn't get the in-joke were better off than those who did. The stage combat was overly choreographed with no contact being made, and the climax's porcupining of Washizu, if you've seen the movie you know what I'm talking about, was done in blackout. But the audience loved it. I haven't heard any reviews of this production, and I'll be curious to see what New York critics have to say about it as this production moves from Ashland to the Brooklyn Academy of Music after the run ends in October. That night, Lisa and I went to the outdoor Elizabethan Theater to watch Twelfth Night. Now, my idea was to take the boys to see Throne of Blood, owing something to their and my Japanese heritage, and to leave them at the rented house for Twelfth Night, where the language I knew would be the tougher Shakespeare. Huge mistake. This production is the one that I should have used to introduce OSF Shakespeare to the boys. This Twelfth Night, directed by Darko Trezniak, was, if not the best stage production of Shakespeare I've seen, then the best production of a Shakespeare comedy I've seen, and most definitely the best Twelfth Night I've ever seen. It was fast, funny, furiously rollicking. It was fun. Trezniak made one major change that for me made all the difference. He moved Viola's landing upon Illyria to the front of the play, pushing Orsino's If Music Be the Food of Love Play On speech to the second scene. Masterful. As the sailors describe Illyria, and both Orsino and Olivia, those characters appeared overhead, in a sense introducing themselves comically to the audience. Now, if you've ever thought The Twelfth Night is a story of the main romantic triangle that's rudely interrupted by the story of those wacky servants, this is not the production for you. The tale of Sir Toby Belch, Mariah, Fabian, Andrew Aguecheek, and Malvolio takes center stage here, and it's great. These characters, as well as Brooke Park's turn as Viola, are the most real in the play, portraits painted in tiny details. Orsino and Olivia, on the other hand, are painted with broad strokes. Kenjuan Bailey's Orsino is a fop, a man a little knowingly effeminate and a little concerned about it, too, while Miriam A. Laub's Olivia, after tossing aside her mourning when she sees Cesario, is a giddy, girlish, horny, thoroughly modern chick. Now, speaking of horny, this production, particularly in its first half, is about the rowdiest, randiest, bawdiest I've seen, and I mean that as a compliment. It was fun. I thought the boys would have loved the dirty jokes, fart noises, and Festy showing off his codpiece for 10-year-old Jack, and for Kyle, the physical innuendo and the verbal discussions of Olivia's C, U, and T's. Her handwriting. Jeez, get your mind out of the gutter. It was also wonderfully musical, from the melodramatic string stabs to Michael Ehrlich's incredible singing as the clown Festy. Michael Hume's Toby, Rex Young's Andrew, Robin Goodwin-Norty's Mariah are all incredible, and all add to a great reactive performance by Christopher Liam Moore as Malvolio. Lisa, at intermission, said that this was the most fun Malvolio she had seen, reveling in his power but still somewhat sympathetic in his love for Olivia. The second half's torture of him is overdone, but I've yet to see a production where it wasn't. At least this production shows us what demons his tormentors are, flooding their acts in a devilish red glow. The production's costumes by Linda Cho are incredible, with Olivia's three dresses, first mourning black, then outrageous pink, and then the stunning white dress for her wedding, demanding a special shout-out. The costumes give us a late 18th century French feel, very decadent, and striking, since when Malvolio, in his final line, says, "I'll be revenged on the whole pack of you," we see each character clutching her throat to the sound of a guillotine falling. Simply brilliant. I could go on, but why? It would just be overkill. This is the best Twelfth Night I've seen, the best comic Shakespeare I've seen, and quite possibly the best bard I've ever seen. Or so I thought. On our third day, our second with plays, since we spent Monday's dark day on the Rogue River rafting the rapids, Kyle and I ventured back into the indoor Bomer Theater for a matinee of Hamlet. This production was directed by OSF artistic director Bill Rausch, and all I can do is echo a handful of people who, when the lights dimmed at the end of the play, said aloud, "Wow." Forget what I said about Twelfth Night possibly being the best Shakespeare I've seen. Nope, not anymore. Hamlet's the king. When we walked into the theater, the stage was set with a coffin draped with the Danish flag, rows of chairs, Hamlet sitting alone in the middle, his head bowed, a handkerchief in his hand, black suit and sunglasses on. All of this in front of an imposing castle wall with four arched doors and a parapet above. After a few minutes, a small group of men gathered to the back of the chairs, conferring. Their leader went to Hamlet and bowed, then seemed to ask him a question. A slight nod from Hamlet, and then they began to take the chairs away quietly. By the end of the pre-show, only the coffin and Hamlet were left. Only now did the house lights dim. There was a blackout, a peal of thunder, and when the play resumed, the stage was bare, and the opening scene started, half played on the parapet, half in the audience before the stage. It was the most incredible opening I've seen since my first Shakespeare over 30 years ago, The Tempest at the Mark Taper Forum in Los Angeles. Now, if the play had sucked from there, I still would have had a great memory to hold on to, but it didn't suck. It took off like a rocket. Where do I begin? It's modern dress, so the sentries and soldiers are what we're accustomed to. The ghost is silent, and it speaks to Hamlet only in sign language. More on that later. When Hamlet or Gertrude or even Claudius speaks of the old Hamlet, and they become passionate or emotional, they break into concurrent signing as well. Fantastic. When we first see Ophelia, she's girlish, cute, and gardening. Perfect given her final mad speeches. Polonius is wonderfully comic and long-winded. The players are a hip-hop troupe. Hamlet's suit progressively becomes more torn and tattered as the play progresses, as he carries a pair of long, sharp scissors throughout the play and cuts his clothing. These are the same scissors he uses to kill Polonius. Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are women. The listening done by Claudius and Polonius is by hidden microphone on Ophelia. She's wired. She shows off the wire to Hamlet midway through their scene, so that the last part is a performance for them, but still incredibly cruel to Ophelia, who at the end of the scene, in her woe-is-me speech, begins to foreshadow her descent into madness. When the ghost appears to Hamlet in Gertrude's chamber, she sees him, though she won't admit it. A fascinating directorial choice. Not supported by the text at all, but very interesting. Ophelia's descent into madness is wonderfully done. She had been girlish before, but when she appears before Gertrude, she is dressed to the nines. Black mourning garb, but think Paris Hilton here. Thin, tight pencil skirt, smart jacket over a ruffled black shirt, hat, big dark shades. When she begins her mad speech giving away flowers, she has no flowers. Instead, she removes a piece of clothing for each flower. The flower she gives to Claudius is her skirt. Gertrude gets a glove, and so it goes until she is down to just her slip. And when she flees the stage, as the door closes behind her, we see that she has already begun to take that off as well. At the play's end, with bodies strewn over the stage, the ghost reappears to take the dead Hamlet in his arms and gently rock him as the lights dim. Simply incredible. And those are just some impressions. The cast is incredible. Dan Donahue's Hamlet is magnificent, funny, sarcastic, angry. He's less paralyzed by doubt than so full of emotions that he can't focus on what is needed. His is not a mad Hamlet. He's acting. But does he just think that he's acting, but is actually crazy? Maybe. It's just a great performance. Richard Elmore as Polonius is fantastic, bombastic yet sincere, funny yet thinking himself serious. Susanna Flood as Ophelia? Oh my God. She's incredibly giddy, girlish, shocked, ashamed, sexy, afraid, and finally mad. Her singing voice is wonderful, and her descent into madness actually brought tears to my eyes, something that had never happened with any other Ophelia I'd seen. One last actor of note here, Howie Ciego as the ghost. A deaf actor, his lines are done through sign language, sometimes verbalized by Hamlet, sometimes not, and to hilarious results. On the ghost's first statement to Hamlet, it's a long string of signing followed by Hamlet's simple, no. It fit the play so well, at first I thought it was a directorial concept, but it wasn't, and more on that later. So the acting was great. The scenic design by Christopher Acebo was wonderful as well, as was the lighting design by Christopher Ackerland. But the biggest kudos have to go to Bill Rausch himself for his direction. Dynamic, progressive, propulsive. Sure, the play ran 3 hours and 15 minutes, but it's freaking Hamlet, not the comedy of errors. Sure, there were a few disgruntled traditionalists in the crowd. Kyle noted one angry man at intermission complaining that they had broken the fourth wall. Well, come on, buddy, it's soliloquy. Get a grip. But it was the best Shakespeare I'd ever seen. Don't believe me? Well, just ask Kyle. He spent most of the trip a brooding teen, bummed to be without friends or an internet connection. But even for those 3 hours and the few that followed, he was taken someplace that he could not stop talking about. And that's simply incredible. That evening, we all four saw Henry IV Part 1 under the stars in the outdoor theater, in the rain. Or at least it rained while we waited to get into our seats, but thankfully stopped for the show. Henry's a tough play. Your title character is not the main character, or even the secondary one. Hal and Hotspur are the fun roles. The king is static. And it's long. That tavern scene goes on forever, and it really could have used some trimming in this production. Penny Metropolis directs the play in period dress, in as realistic a tone as possible. Now that means that the wenches are syphilitic and pox-infected, the mistress quickly a scary bawd, and the tavern dwellers dirty and smelly, and Falstaff a little darker. It may have been more realistic, but it wasn't as much fun as I had hoped. A note here. Metropolis directed The Comedy of Errors during my first trip to Ashland 20 years ago. Her comedy, then, was less funny, as it too tried to be more realistic, setting the tale in the Middle East with scary Turks. The acting here was solid across the board, including Howie Ciego as Poins, who communicated through signing with Hal. It was only then that I realized that The Ghost in Hamlet was not a directorial concept, but it worked there like it was conceptual. Here, not so much. It's just a little hard to buy in such a realistic setting, a character in 15th century England using modern American sign language. But the guy who steals the show is Kevin Kennerly as Hotspur. Yep, this is the same guy who played the Washizu character, the Macbeth analog in Throne of Blood. He was good there, but great here. Fiery, charismatic, funny, frustratingly obstinate. Just fantastic. David Kelly's Falstaff was solid in the world of this production, but it just didn't make me laugh. And maybe it's just that I wanted something else, something more playful, something more fun. Neither Falstaff nor Hal was as much fun as I had wanted, and my enjoyment wasn't as great as I had hoped. And by Jack sleeping through the second act and Kyle's less-than-stellar review, I can only assume that I wasn't alone. At least the sword fighting was great. Not exactly a glowing recommendation, huh? Well, one last play on our last full day in Ashland, and this one I wasn't even sure I was going to talk about, as it isn't Shakespeare or even Shakespeare-related like Throne of Blood, but I've got to at least mention American Night, the world premiere of the first of OSF's ambitious 10-year plan to present 37 plays that have as their basis a kind of American history. This one was written by the guys from Culture Clash, a Southern California troupe that in the past has specialized in political theater and performance art, particularly from a Hispanic perspective. This play is no different. A fever dream of a young Mexican man, Juan Jose, who is studying for his citizenship exam the next morning. Now, does that sound boring or didactic or polemic? Well, it's none of the first, a little of the second, and a whole lot of the third. This play is wildly funny, irreverent, brutally satiric, and smart. Juan Jose dreams of real historical characters like Sacagawea, who he calls Sacachihuahua, Viola and Ben Pettis, Ralph Lazo, Jackie Robinson, and Henry Bridges. Now, if you don't recognize some of those names, that's the point. These are, at least in the mind of our hero and our playwrights, American heroes who don't get much play in our history books. Juan Jose has a kaleidoscopic dream where he travels through history to meet these characters. And as he reaches the present, the play takes on the concept of illegal immigration and intolerance. Now, I'm not making this sound nearly as fun as it is. So, what do I recommend? Well, if you love Shakespeare, then you gotta hit Ashland at least once in your life. And if it happens to be this summer and you're doing multiple plays, then check out Throne of Blood. If you've got to limit it to just a handful, definitely make sure you see American Night. If you're just gonna see two, then you gotta see both Twelfth Night and Hamlet. But if you can see only one play, and you're not too much of a traditionalist, then you have got to see Hamlet. It is simply magnificent. The best Shakespeare production I have ever seen, though Twelfth Night will disappoint absolutely no one. Hamlet, American Night, and Throne of Blood are in production through the end of October, while the outdoor plays of Twelfth Night and Henry IV Part 1 end their runs the first week of October. Okay, so if you haven't been following the blog, you're probably wondering where in the heck I've been for the last 2 months. Or is it 3 months? Anyway, long period of time. Or if you hadn't, you're probably pretty bored listening to that last Romeo and Juliet podcast over and over, week after week, for the last 10 or so weeks. Regardless, here's why I've been gone. I've been writing a novel. I started it back in late April, and by late May, I wanted some wide-open, non-blogging, yet still unemployed time to write. I finished the first draft of the book in mid-July, and I've been revising ever since, and now that that process is beginning to get to a point where I don't need uninterrupted time to continue, I can get back to the monthly readings. Now, someday soon, I hope that you'll have a chance to buy, and will actually go out and purchase, hint hint, A Bloody Rose by Any Other. Nifty title, huh? But until then, join us again in September when we venture forth into that uber-popular play, King John. We hope to see you then. You've been listening to the Bill Shakespeare Project podcast for August 29th, 2010. For our blog and previous podcast episodes, check us out at thebillshakespeareproject.com, and we shall see thee anon. I don't feel dirty.